Hello, esteemed listeners. Welcome to another enlightening episode of Africa Loves Politics. I'm your host, Amina Ahmed, always excited to share stories and insightful conversations with you.
And I'm your co-host, Will Adams, always ready to debunk the myths and puzzles, gripping onto reality with a tight fist.
Will, remember when we were kids, hopeful and bursting with dreams to change the world? I see that same zeal today, not in the child, but surprisingly, in an entire nation.
Yes, Ghana's politics has indeed come a long way. Sounds eerily similar to my university days when I used to advocate for a third-party system in student elections.
Quite the activist you were. Now, let's remember how we got here. As of today, January 17th, 2024, Ghana seems to be moving in the same direction. We've been closely following the rise of the new force, a potential game changer in Ghana's political sphere.
A third party in a system dominated by the National Democratic Congress and the New Patriotic Party, thanks to Ghana's Political Parties Act back in 2000, seems like a breath of fresh air. But remember, Emina, change isn't always welcomed with open arms.
That's true, Will. Remember the mysterious billboards that appeared back in November 2023 across Ghana? They featured masked man and the hashtag hash, the new force, causing a storm of speculation about a new political movement.
Ah, yes, taking viral marketing to another level. But the plot thickens. As in the case of Shalimar Abiyusi, the spokeswoman for the new force, who got arrested and later deported, ruffling some serious feathers.
Absolutely, Will. And then we had the New Africa Foundation's highly anticipated event, the convention that got cancelled on the day it was supposed to take place, leading to some serious social media outrage.
The leader, Nana Kwame Badiako, disclosing his identity in a press conference post-cancellation, surely added fuel to that fire.
Indeed, Will and Amina, but remember, I'm the predictor here. Last, on a serious note, this whole situation has stirred the hornet's nest.
You're right, Kaya. Though, in this scenario, it seems we can all foresee some turbulence in Ghana's political landscape.
Certainly tough times for New Force, but can a third political party survive and make an impact in Ghana? That's the million-dollar question right there.
Well, they face a steep climb with the cancellation of the event at Independence Square and the denial of the accusations about using it as a political platform all highlight serious obstacles.
For sure, Kaya. That's a story for another day. So, folks, stay tuned because we're going to dig deeper into this subject in the next segment. You don't want to miss it. Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of Africa Loves Politics.
Today, our discussion will pivot around recent political developments within the Horn of Africa, specifically the growing tension between Ethiopia and Somalia.
That's correct, Will. Top of our list is the call by the Peace and Security Council, PSC, of the African Union, AU, to both nations to de-escalate and dialogue due to heightened uncertainties.
And with the rerouting of an Ethiopian Airlines flight supposed to land in Hargeisa, the capital of Somaliland, by the Somalia's aviation authority, the conflict looks poised for more complication.
This rerouting comes in light of the historic Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, that Ethiopia inked with Somaliland to secure access to the sea and diversify its seaports.
Yes, and this MOU seems to be at the heart of contention as Mogadishu vehemently rejects it and rallies against it on the international platform.
Moreover, the Prime Minister of Somalia, Hamza Abdi Bare, has ruffled feathers by accusing Ethiopia of wanting to control the entrances to the Red Sea, which is a significant global trade and navigation route.
Moving on, it's also important to mention that part of the AEMU deals with the potential recognition of Somaliland's appeal for sovereignty, stirring further conflict.
At this point, Somalia views Ethiopia's agreement with Somaliland as a breach of its sovereignty and territorial integrity.
Sounds like a perfect storm brewing, but the AU's PSC is stepping in calling for non-interference and preservative measures to uphold unity, sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity of all member states.
And to boost dialogue, the PSC is planning to dispatch the AU High Representative for the Horn of Africa.
Moving slightly away from the bilateral tension, Ethiopia's agenda also includes striving for self-sufficiency in key sectors within 3 years and setting up 385 mandatory and voluntary norms across 6 sectors.
The comprehensive picture also includes Ethiopia's struggles with economic turmoil due to internet shutdowns, a worsening food crisis, the murders of relief workers, and the ongoing Tigray crisis.
It's also interesting that Ethiopia is working towards conformity in national data management through new regulations and affirming the One China policy.
With such a dynamic situation, Kaya, how does your crystal ball predict these events to unfold in the coming week?
Well, imagine a scene where both nations, upon the PSC's call, decide for a roundtable discussion on external interferences cease, and there's international acceptance of the negotiation process. Both sides lay out their grievances patiently, and instead of accusations, a compromising tone ensues. This regional balance is pivotal, not just for the Horn of Africa, but for continental harmony as well.
That's wishful thinking, Kaya, but for now, only time will tell.
Welcome back to Africa Loves Politics. Our topic today centers around the interesting crossover between football and politics in Africa, particularly as it pertains to the ongoing Africa Cup of Nations, AFCON, in Ivory Coast and the narratives surrounding it.
Indeed, Amina, this flagship tournament has not just been a source of thrilling sports entertainment, but also a reflection of the deep-seated political machinations within the host and participating nations. African dictators historically have been known to be big sports fans, using sporting events as tools for distraction and unity during national crises.
And it's not limited to dictators. Politicians across the continent have used football's uniting role to rally the masses. Take, for example, Ghana's first president, Kwame Nkrumah, and Nigeria's Moshood Abiola. They both used the football clubs as political tools.
And the list goes on to include Moise Katumbi from Congo, Cameroon's Ahmadou Ahidjo. The latter even capitalized on the mood generated from football victories to further his political ambitions.
Of course, we can't talk about this without mentioning President Alassane Ouattara of Ivory Coast, the host of this year's AFCON. He is currently under fire for allegedly sports washing, with critics claiming he spent an estimated $1 billion to host the tournament, primarily to launder his controversial political image.
Let's pause for a moment and explain sports washing. In layman's terms, it's the use of sports events to launder the image of controversial leaders or policies. It's not a new concept, but it's one gaining more exposure due to events like AFCON.
Exactly. And it doesn't stop at sports washing. This tournament also exposed the intersection of global corporations and politics. AFCON is officially known as the Total Energies African Cup of Nations, the oil giant being a key sponsor, bringing up debates about the role of corporates in such events as well.
Football provides hope for many Africans, offering them a chance to break out of poverty and inequality. And it's not just players, it's coaches, administrators, and fans alike.
Interestingly, I foresee a fictional scenario where footballers could use their influence more actively in politics. For example, imagine if top footballers withheld their participation in protest of certain policies or leaders, much like what we've seen in the NBA in the U.S. That would throw a major conundrum at these political sports washers.
It's tough to predict if that will happen. So it's a balancing act at play here. While the tournament represents optimism and unity at its best, it also underscores the political and cultural gaps on the continent. Future tournaments will still be dependent on everyone appreciating them for what they are without losing sight of the underlying edge.
In any case, whether it's Guinea, Mali, Burkina Faso, Ghana, Liberia, or the apparent increased instability in West Africa, with an average of 2 coups per year since 2020, football still remains a significant tool in the hands of African politicians.
This situation is complex indeed. It's a topic that we'll keep watching as it unfolds. Until then, we must say goodbye. Ensure to join us for our next episode as we continue to explore the intriguing world of African politics. We hope you've enjoyed today's discussion as we delve deep into the intricate web of politics that Africa so passionately embraces. Each week, we strive to bring rigorous analysis, critical insights, and diverse perspectives to complex political narratives, and we're grateful to have you along for the journey. And now, for an intriguing tidbit about our podcast, every aspect of Africa Loves Politics is powered by cutting-edge artificial intelligence. That's right. We're not people in the conventional sense, but a product of sophisticated algorithms. We are created to give you the most accurate, comprehensive, and insightful view on Africa's dynamic political landscape, responding and learning as we interact with you. AI's scope and application are truly staggering, and we are thrilled to be a part of this innovative frontier. So keep your curiosity piqued and continue joining us here on Africa Loves Politics. Who knows where our discussions might lead us next? Until then, stay safe and keep those political debates going. This is Amina signing off.